Very long discussion about I put it in my pocket. Good. About that the breath is based on both body and the mind and so on. We don't need to discuss this in detail. I have also in my computer the Chinese text, which is slightly different from our text. It may be also very helpful. Our text tends to be sometimes using rather complicated words, and actually the text itself does not use so many complicated words. So I will just summarize the text. It starts like this. The anapana has two processes. Here we can translate the process of the in-breath, which was breath goes downwards, and the process of out-breath, where the breath goes upwards. Then this process of in-breath and out-breath has two bhumi, or two bases, which are the two the gross space and the subtle space. We have discussed that. Every form needs a space to be manifested. And the gross breath is manifested in the gross space, which is called saushiryam. In yoga, that means the breathing tube and the the area above the more, how they say in English, perineum.
Every button.
This
diaphragm.
No, this is more. I know in Chinese. It means the membrane which divides this
peritoneum.
It is a very important organ which is connected with the breath, this membrane here. So that space above this membrane, it's called saushirya, going up to the mouth and to the nose. When you practice pranayama, the explanation always speaks about this. Then you have the subtle space we have explained, which is in called the Roma Kupa, which means the wells of the hair, but actually it means the pores of the body. So these pores of the body, they are the subtle space. We have explained that we can understand it in a more modern way to be just cellular breathing. Every cell to be alive needs a space around it so that it can expand and shrink. Expand and shrink, we have explained, is the process of life. We are alive, nature is also alive. Now you are learning the Qigong. This is very important. This expansion and shrinking is a process of life. Starting with the plants, going up to the more complex organism, to humans, gods, and whatever exists must expand and shrink if it is based on the body. Of course, in the higher spheres, this may not take place. I have not visited there. Okay, so we have two processes, and these two processes based on the two spaces, the gross space and the subtle space. The space is not gross or subtle, but we can understand it. So this gross space is from the below the navel up to the nose, and from nose to the navel again, and the subtle space, as we have explained, are the omakupas, the pores of the body. So when we breathing in and breathing out, we are actually using both the subtle breath and the gross breath. But when we are not breathing through the nose or through the mouth, but we should breathe through the nose, then we are only using, the body is still breathing. This process of breathing never stops because it is a process of life. So we only breathe through the subtle space, cellular space, because this movement of expansion and shrinking exists every moment. Otherwise we are dead. When it ceases to exist, then the life faculties goes out of the body. Then the process of in-breath and out-breath has four names. The first one is wind, vayu. This is the general name, the text says. Then it is called anapana, which means in-breath and out-breath. Ana is in-breath, apana is out-breath. Then it is called rusi chusi. It is called in and out, breathing. And then it is called the kaya sankhara. We have explained it in the morning. The breath, why is breath called kaya sankhara? Because it forms the body. We are using this principle also in the study of Qigong, in the study of yoga. In Buddhism we speak of kaya sankhara, the formation of the body, and we speak of citta sankhara, the formation of the mind. What is formation of the mind? Sensation and perception. Sensation and perception form the mind. The mind cannot exist without them. And the breath forms a body because the body, when it is alive, it is shrinking and expanding. And that is a job of the wind element, vibration. pushing. Next, this process of in-breath and out-breath has two errors or two shortcomings. This is very important, and it is explained in the text to some in some detail. What are the shortcomings of in-breath and out-breath in meditation? That the in-breath and out-breath is forceful, quick, too fast, or it is slack, it is too slow. So it should neither be too fast nor too slow. In some Chinese texts like Liu Miaomen that I have mentioned of the Tiantai tradition, the correct breathing conducive to samadhi and wisdom is described in detail. If we breathing correctly, the breath does not make any sound. First principle. If we breathe in such a way that we can use the breathing for developing concentration and wisdom, the breath should be smooth from beginning to the end, without the zigzag, without the pauses in between. This is the second principle. Then the breath should be smooth, soft, not gross, not rough. These are the three conditions which allow the breath to attune to concentration and wisdom. In our text it is explained that the breath should be balanced, not too fast, not too slow. If it is too fast, it will lead to audatyam, it will lead to excitement. If it is too slow, it will lead to slackness, it will lead to lethargy. So, actually, we will talk about it later. In the Northern tradition, we explain the process of developing concentration, the process of shamatha, by exactly by fighting against these two tendencies, here concerned with the mind, of course, but mind and breath are connected. Either the mind is audatyam, audatyam means is rising, that means excitement, or it is sinking, that means tinamida, that means loss and torpor. So all the hindrances to concentration, in order to get deep concentration, we will talk about it, we have to avoid five hindrances. You may have heard that. The hindrance of kama chanda, the hindrance of the sensual desire, the hindrance of pratigha, the hindrance of the striking against, of resistance, of anger, the hindrance of sloth and torpor, the hindrance of excitement and worry, and the hindrance of doubt. All these five hindrances, they can be summarized as the tendency of mind either to sinking, sloth and torpor, and all the others, they are tendencies for excitement, for destruction. So actually getting the samadhi is the fight against from gross to the most subtle manifestations of this tendency of mind, either to sinking or to rising. When the mind flows equally, this is a state of samadhi. When it flows equally, you don't need any extra effort, and the mind just stays in a balanced, perfect position. And in the northern tradition, it is emphasized rather than practicing the jhanas, it is emphasized the meditation should keep this balanced mind free from sloth and torpor and free from excitement. With this mind, then you can practice the jhanas as you wish. You can practice, if you used to it, you can practice anything. You can practice Zen, you can practice Vipassana, you can practice all the Mahamudra and the techniques practiced in the Tibetan Buddhism. The essence of meditation practice is to keep effortless balance of mind. If we want to understand the northern tradition, it emphasizes rather this state than the states of jhana. Why? Because in the dhyana, unless you have supernatural powers, we have explained the Buddha has got enlightenment through the supernatural powers, the mind is practically stuck in the image. It cannot move from the image with which it has merged together. And this mind, which is in state of perfect balance, it can go merge with the image, it can go out of the image in any time, take another image, and it can also go into the contemplation of emptiness, as you have in the described in the Heart Sutra. So you can do with that mind anything. And that mind can also join, we will talk about it later, this is the essence of meditation in the northern tradition, it can join, even so your object is not nirvana, it can join the shamatha and vipassana on the base of prashraddhi, on the base of pliancy. Prashraddhi is translated as pliancy, but actually it implies many things: clarity, the relaxation, lightness, smoothness, straightness. All this is implied in pliancy. So we will talk about it later. The essence of meditation is keep this effortless balance of mind. And no matter whether it is in the state of dhyana or in the state of the vipassana, this state should be effortless. When it is effortless, you become master of meditation. This is the emphasis of the northern tradition, related or based in the philosophy of transcendental wisdom. So the text describes this if you put too much effort into the breathing, it can lead to many kinds of diseases. This is very interesting. As opposed to Theravada, which does not mention very much the medical aspect of Buddhism, the northern tradition, very often also this text refers to medicine, because the Buddha is the king of the medics. In a Theravada tradition, it's only concerned with the mind, but in the northern tradition, Chinese tradition, Tibetan tradition, it is also linked to the science of yoga. And yoga, as you may know, is closely linked to Ayurveda, to medicine, indeed. Similarly, in Chinese medicine, Qigong is part of the medicine. So now we come to the important point through which the whole structure of this description on which it is based. It says, in order to let the mind become balanced, tinten, in a state of harmony, state of sameness. So one should practice five kinds of practices in order to master the meditation on the breath. Here we come to what we have learned, but we see it from a different aspect. Why? We will discuss it later, and I hope in some more detail. In northern tradition, starting with the Shramana, with the Shravaka, with the tradition of the disciples, with Agamas, the emphasis is on connecting the shamatha and vipassana together rather than separating them, as is very often done in the Theravada tradition, Theravada interpretation. So this is very important, and this links also this tradition more to the Indian tradition of yoga, as we have mentioned. So there are five practices to be mastered in order to keep the breath in balance in a natural way. So which are the five practices? And they are then explained in detail. Detail, not really much in detail, but to some extent in detail. You can elaborate on it much more, and it is done in other scriptures, not here. So the first is, as we have said, ganana, counting. In this tradition, the counting becomes very, very thorough. We may not need to go through this detailed description of these different types of counting, but we will mention some important aspects. So first, you master counting. We have also explained that once you have understanding of the whole through the practice of the four foundations of the mindfulness, when you come to the Dhamma Anupassana, to the meditation on the mental objects like the aggregates and so on, the objects of wisdom, the Four Noble Truths, the dependent origination, all these are inner objects, objects of wisdom. When you have grasped them, then you have the whole. And only when you have the whole, you can use vipassana to make a breakthrough, and you can make it in any stage. Once you see the whole, so you will see in this text these five stages, actually the 16 exercises are explained after one has attained through the other practices, one has attained breakthrough. That means the entrance into the stream. Then the 16 practices in this text, 16 exercises are explained as in a way as bhavana marga, as the path of meditation to attain the state of arahat. This text I have already mentioned, but I have to mention again and again, belongs to the part of the scripture explaining the path of the disciples. But the path of the disciples, it is so interesting about this text, is explained already from the perspective of the mind only. This makes this text very interesting. We will talk about it later. All that exists eventually is only the mind. So counting comes first. Then getting clarity over the aggregates. Insight into the aggregates. Wuru we can translate as insight or enlightenment about the aggregates. That is number two. Then enlightenment or insight into the dependent origination. When you understand the aggregates, you can investigate the dependent origination all on the base of the breath. When you have insight into the dependent origination, you can get the insight into the four noble truths. Actually, the truths are not noble, as Abhidharma Kosha explains. It is the persons who realize them which are noble. This is very important to understand. The truths themselves, they are not noble. We may have these truths, understand them, but unless we have realized them, they are not noble truths. This is what Abhidharma Kosha explains. This is very much emphasized in the northern tradition. And then you have these 16 exercises. So the five shikshas, the five kinds of learning, in order to make the breath completely balanced. And this is the aim of meditation practice. When the breath is completely balanced, the mind becomes completely balanced. So there is no place for excitement and there is no place for thinking. So you have 100% mindfulness. Now we are not arahats because we don't have 100% mindfulness. So we are still learning. The arahat cannot interrupt his mindfulness. If he interrupts his mindfulness, he may get defilements. So no way for interrupting mindfulness. And because he does not interrupt the mindfulness, he always stays in the balance, in samadhi. So this is very important to understand. And this state of balance is also called sankhara upeksha, the equanimity in regard to the will formations. This arahat is arahat because he always stays in the state of equanimity in regard to the will formations. So his mindfulness is not interrupted. So The aim of the Buddhist practice is to bring the mind into a perfect balance. You will have a similar idea in Visuddhimagga also. If you work with the breath, the Visuddhimagga explains both the shamatha and vipassana, they lead to the sublimation of the breath. Both concentration and wisdom sublimate the breath. When this sublimation becomes mature, the mind stays naturally in the state of equanimity in regard to the will formations. So, bye-bye samsara. So these are the five kinds of learning we have to go through in order to keep the mind always in balance. This is very important. So now comes a more detailed explanation, and today we just do the part concerned with counting. So in this text, I won't go into detail, you have four types of counting. The first type of counting is in-breath 1, out-breath 1. From 1, in-breath 1, out-breath 2, in-breath 3, out-breath 4. So going one by one, up to 10. The next, which is explained in Visuddhimagga, is in-breath, out-breath 1, in-breath, out-breath 2, in-breath, out-breath 3, in-breath, out-breath 4, and so on, up to 10. If you go to Burma, like a Paok, so they don't take this 10 too seriously. The Master Paok may explain you count to 8 to remember the Eightfold Noble Path or something like that. But anyway, one does not count less than 5. Some commentaries say if you count less than 5, then you will be tight, no space. And not more than 10. If you count more than 10, then you pay attention to counting, you forget the breath. So not less than 5, not more than 10, you can think. But in this text it is explained rigidly, count to 10. Now you can count either anuloma or pratiloma. How to count anuloma? One or in breath out 2 1, in breath out breath 1, from 1 to 10, then it becomes very complicated. Then 2 as 1, then 3 as 1, then 4 as 1, then 5 as 1, then 6 as 1, up to 10 as 1. That is anuloma. That means shun, going up. And the next one is pratiloma. When you come to 10 multiplied by 10, 100, then you start from 100 counting again, 10 as 1, 9 as 1, 8 as 1, and go back. If during this whole period you don't forget the breath and you don't mix up the counting, you are a master in counting. So they pay much attention to this training. Naturally, when you count like this, then your mind becomes very concentrated, and when it becomes very concentrated, you naturally see the long or short breath, and you then naturally start placing also. So you may get a strong concentration even while counting. That's why they don't separate these stages rigidly, as some teachers tend to do. This approach emphasizes flexibility. So you can get clarity at any stage, once you have gone through them thoroughly. And it also says, we won't go into detail, that this kind of painful training with counting is especially in regard to those who have dull faculties, those who have keen faculties, you say in English, no? Those who have keen faculties, they may be very bored. And they may be distracted, so they don't need to go through this painful process. They can very soon come to the next stage, which we have discussed, which is the following anugamana. So in this text you will have a very long description. What is very important, once you count the breath, suppose in-breath, out-breath 4, in-breath, out-breath 5, in-breath, out-breath 7, what do? You come immediately punish yourself, come immediately back to 1. Again, when you start following your images which occur in the mind and forget about the breath, again you punish yourself, start again from the beginning, again start from the beginning, again punish yourself, again from the beginning, until you can go through all these stages, accumulating the counting of the in-breath and out-breath, and again going from the 100 back to the 1. Then you become master of counting. In the northern tradition, the meditators, starting in Abhidhamma Kosha already, meditators are 3 types. Those who are beginners, those who have mastered the attention, and those who go beyond the attention. They are manasikara atikranta. They go beyond the attention, that means they have completely mastered that attention, particular attention. So once you can do this cycle, you have mastered completely this process of counting. I have explained before, in the Chinese tradition, each and every exercise has the part of Xiu and part of Zhen. Xiu means practice, and Zhen means witnessing the fruits of the practice. When you have witnessed the fruits of the practice, you automatically already in the next stage. So when you have witnessed the fruit of counting, you automatically already in the following, when you are in the following, you witness the following, you automatically go into placing. When you have witnessed the placing, you automatically go into the sublimation of the breath until it disappears. So always training and witnessing, training, witnessing, training, witnessing, training, witnessing. This is how it goes. Now comes the very important part, which we will discuss in detail. They are, so to say, not two stages in the process of in-breath and out-breath, but they are four stages we have explained yesterday. Namely, the in-breath, then that what the text calls the in-between breath, then out-breath, and out in between breaths. So that period when you're not using the gross space to breathe, you're only using the subtle space, that period is in between breaths, because you are still breathing, your cells are still expanding and shrinking. So when you're not breathing through the big space, when you're not breathing through the nose, then you are in the stage of in-between breaths. Now you start paying attention to this in-between breaths. Attention is what makes the object clear. If you don't pay attention to the object, it will not be clear. The meditation is connected with the art of concentrated, mindful attention. If we want to master meditation, we have to make it a habit. Concentrated, mindful attention. So that one does not get stuck in either holding the object or rejecting the object. So the mind does not lose the balance. Now, this in-between breath becomes a clear object only when you pay attention to it. But you should not pay attention to it forcefully, like in the pranayama. As Abhidharma Kosha explains, Vasubandhu explains very clearly, this is a difference between the yoga pranayama and the anapanasati. You, by the mindfulness, attention with mindfulness and awareness, you naturally start to prolong this period of in-between breaths. Because you pay attention to it, it becomes a clear object. When you pay attention to it, there is no breath, gross breath going through the nose, so naturally the attention is concerned with the whole body. You don't need to think about it. When you don't breathe through the nose, the attention naturally goes to the whole body. So we have already explained, when we're breathing in and out, the whole body is participating, but you are not aware of it so much because you are concerned with this big space, not with the subtle spaces. But here you become concerned with the subtle spaces, the whole body. So that means the touch, this anapana nimitta, appears on the touch, and the touch becomes the whole body. Here comes this idea I told you, you breathe in like filling the sack with the sand, filling the you imagine your body to be like a sack of the sand, you fill it, and you empty it again with breath. When you work like this and pay more and more attention to the in-between breath, then this in-between breath becomes a clear object and the gross breath goes into the background. And this is how you sublimate the breath. This gross breath goes into the background and the subtle breath goes into the foreground by this attention. Until finally this gross breath disappears completely. And what remains is only this subtle breath. According to this text, even this subtle breath eventually may disappear. But this is beyond our ability. We will have to become super yogis for that. So let us finish here because we have still, if I see well, we will discuss it more. Tomorrow we have plenty of time to discuss this. Now, just to get some idea, and we will go through it again and again and get some more information. What is the program now? 6:30 to 7:15. 7:15 to 7:30, walk, stretch. Please walk, stretch. We will start 7:30. Oh, sorry, we were supposed to do sitting now. But I think it is better to do first talking and then sitting. So let us correct it. What do you think, Sarah? So we will do the other way, not as it is written here. First we will do the Dhamma talk, because we are rested and we have good ability to concentrate. Then we use this good ability to concentrate on the discourse, then to digest in sitting. Is it better? You agree? So we do like that. So now we have give it 15 minutes for walking meditation, stretching, and then we start in 15 minutes, so 45 minutes sitting session. Okay. And what about questions and answers? I'm a bit... When do we do them? After meditation? Okay. So you can, if you wish, you don't need to, you can experiment with this method that I have now mentioned, and then we can discuss, make your own experience how it works.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.